Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to the Extra Sauce Podcast.
It's my fancy sauce.
I want some fancy sauce.
Yeah.
I'm not done using it.
With the czar of sauces, Greg Hill.
This week's episode of the podcast will be completely different than it was going to be because of the death of Chris Cornell. And I think we both felt like we ought to spend a little bit of time on that because it was such a shocking loss and such a surprise at at 52 years old.
And someone who was sober, who seemed to be, you know, on the outside, seemed to be dealing with that.
Yes.
You know, for like over a decade, he had been sober.
Yeah.
He'd been trying to take care of himself. His voice was still good.
He's
gotten Soundgarden back together.
Yeah. You know,
things were looking great. And yeah, shocking is the word for this.
We're going to, in just a few moments, we're going to be joined by Joe Perry of Aerosmith, who is in Israel and has some fond memories of Chris Cornell and their interaction, and has a really unique perspective on substance abuse and what the rock and roll lifestyle is like. And those guys, Aerosmith keeps playing on and on and on. Aerosmith will play forever. I don't want to Hillman jinx anything,
right.
But I mean, they just, and those guys, Steven Tyler and Joe Perry, their nickname was the Toxic Twins because they did so much stuff
of everything.
They did so much of that stuff, and have been able to recover and to keep going. But I guess the big question until we get to Joe is about the why of this, and if indeed the police reports are correct that it's a suicide. It's anybody who's lost somebody to this, that you're always asking that question, and many times you never get an answer.
Because there's no formula. There's no same answer.
Yeah.
There's no
everybody's
standard
different,
issue.
I guess.
Right. Every single case is completely different, you know, because it's just the variables are all there. It's never just one thing. It's never because there was drug abuse or you had a tough childhood. It's always a combination or a culmination of things.
Well, but you think about, and I was saying this on the show. I mean, his voice was the absolute, you know, you can make a case for Chris Cornell's voice being the best voice of the 1990s.
Well,
might have to include like Whitney Houston in that or something. But when it comes to hitting high notes, you know, he had like a what do they call, is it octaves? He had a four octave range.
He had a
four octave range.
Yeah,
which you hear not only in Soundgarden songs, but in Temple of the Dog, you know, in Hunger Strike, and everybody's been examining his tweets over the last 3 or 4 days, and his Mother's Day tweets are about his wife being the greatest mother and his angel and the love of, it's tough to take, and I guess there's no rhyme or reason to why it happens. Why somebody takes their own life.
It's different for each case. You know, and as far as his voice goes, I put him up there with Robert Plant.
Yeah.
You know, as far as rock singers go. I know you put him with Whitney Houston. Yes, he's up there with a great voice, but as far as rock singers, he's up there with Robert Plant and Ronnie James Dio and people like Paul Rogers and Freddie Mercury. You know, because of that range you were talking about. So he could do the screaming hard rock stuff and then just easily lay down an acoustic track and make it sound so very, very sweet.
Yeah.
Just a beautiful, beautiful song, like the song Seasons from the single soundtrack.
Yeah.
To me, that's just showing his vocal gymnastics.
Well, the cover,
fantastic he was.
The cover that we played on the show of the Sinead O'Connor song "Nothing Compares to You"
right.
it gives you goosebumps.
Yeah,
I mean it you know his. And then at the end of the show, we played his version of "Redemption Song," which he did on the Jimmy Fallon show on the Tonight Show, and that gives me goosebumps too. I mean his voice was just an absolutely amazing voice,
and it had power.
Yeah,
that's the thing. It went through you. You mentioned Whitney Houston. That voice it goes right into you. You know, you mentioned someone like Robert Plant when he screams or when he sings, you can feel it. And the same thing with Chris Cornell. I remember first hearing his voice and just thinking, oh my God.
Didn't you see them in 1988 at a college campus or something like that?
I first heard them when I was working in college radio and the album Ultra Mega OK came out and they were touring and they were playing at Hampshire College and I was up in North Adams and I went to see them. They were playing in their dining.
Road trip?
Yeah,
road
it was trip, awesome. We always trip. Took a road trip. Hampshire College has a lot of money, so they always got really good bands. And they played in their dining commons. They pushed the folding cafeteria tables up against the wall.
Yeah.
And there they were, Soundgarden, and they were so loud. It was one of the loudest shows I've ever seen. And you could barely hear his voice, but as a performer, as a guy on stage, you couldn't take your eyes off of him.
Were you into the grannies back then, or is that a recent thing?
Greg. Not into the grannies now,
either. You were into...
Do we have to taint this awesome conversation with elderly porn?
You were into
false
older...
False accusations?
You were into older women. They were just in their 30s.
Yes, exactly.
Back then because
and
were,
I'm still into women in their 30s. There's nothing wrong with it.
No, I saw Soundgarden open up for... The first time I ever saw them live was they opened up for Guns N' Roses at the, I believe the show was at the Centrum, and this would be 1991 or 1992. They gave Guns N' Roses a run for their money when it came to that show. And it's just, I mean, I don't know. There's something about that grunge scene. I mean, Chris Cornell is certainly one of the founding fathers of grunge. So, I mean, his Andrew Wood of Mother Love Bone, who Chris wrote Say Hello to Heaven about.
Right.
That whole
Temple of the Dog album was a project started by him writing songs about his friend.
Yes. Yeah. And he, you know, Andrew Wood was his roommate and his very good friend, and he died of a heroin overdose.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kurt Cobain killed himself. Lane Staley is gone.
Heroin.
Heroin. And, you know, Scott Weiland, not STP, not a Seattle band, but a part of that
right.
of that genre
yeah,
and, of
same
that,
era.
And of that era.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is. Like, I don't know if, I mean, maybe the substance abuse stuff ends up being all tied into it and it's, it manipulates your mind enough that
right.
that you're not thinking straight. Or
I think that was the case in Kurt Cobain's case.
You think so?
Because he had a heroin problem, and I think he couldn't think clearly.
Definitely the case when he married Courtney Love.
Yeah, absolutely.
Was not
I mean, you had to
clearly.
Had to be on something.
Yeah.
You know, but I think with grunge, you're grunge was great because it mixed the old with the new. So you had the guys who loved Led Zeppelin and loved Black Sabbath, but they also loved, say, like the Red Hot Chili Peppers and the Butthole Surfers.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And they kind of mixed the two together and had that punk ethic in there. But you listen to a lot of the stuff that you mentioned, and you know, a lot of it is very dark, it's very gloomy. You know, not a lot of positive stuff in there.
Yeah.
And I think that's the kind of people you had to be that kind of person. For real, you know, to the
bone. Yeah, you can't fake it. Like,
right.
you can't,
to make that kind of music.
Yeah,
and I think that
it's not like Bieber. You know, when Bieber is throwing eggs at somebody's house, or you know, driving his Ferrari.
Now, see, that's
fast. Like it's not.
That's not dark.
It's not douchebag.
It's douchey.
It's,
right.
Yeah, that's what Bieber is doing
to the bone.
These guys had to live, and that's all they did. Like you read the stuff about Nirvana, and in the early days, driving around in a van, you know, like a used van and no money, not a cent to them. And I also wonder, I want to ask Joe Perry about this, if it's also like a big, like when you start off that way, and then, you know, this is a big thing with Kurt Cobain is he didn't want to be, you know, I don't know if it's an act or it was legit or not, but he didn't want to be famous. And so he didn't want to deal with what happens when you become Kurt Cobain, but, and yeah. and when grunge, you know, when Smells Like Teen Spirit is the number one song in the, you know, in the world, is that too much to take? You know,
yeah,
again,
I think that is a huge part of it. And if you look at Guns N' Roses, like you just mentioned, there's a band, I wouldn't call it overnight success, but they got famous very quickly.
Right.
And look what it did to them.
Yeah.
You know, and then they became extremely paranoid and they went at each other. And I think that's definitely a factor. All of a sudden, you're in a city, Seattle, which there's tons of record company people looking for the next big thing.
Yeah.
And then next thing you know, you're famous very quickly, and MTV had to help in that.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
you don't know who to trust, and you get paranoid, and then, you know, if you add, you know, some depression or drug addiction on top of that, it just enhances it.
Well, it's a huge loss, and his voice was a powerful voice, and I'm curious what Joe Perry says about where that voice ranks in all the voices that he has heard in the history of voices. So if you get a chance have you had the opportunity to watch any of Chris Cornell's last performance yet? If you read into things, he works In My Time of Dying, the Led Zeppelin song, into what would eventually end up being the very last song that he ever plays at that performance Wednesday night. So it's a big loss. We're talking about Chris Cornell, and we are joined now by Joe Perry of Aerosmith, who is good enough to join us from far, far away and give us a little extra sauce on Chris Cornell.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. I know you're in Israel, and I appreciate you joining us on the podcast. And I know you tweeted about Chris Cornell, and I guess I forgot those guys at Soundgarden had toured with you guys.
Well, in the early days, yeah, of their career. I've met him a few times. But boy, it was a shock reading that. I mean, today.
Yeah.
Hearing about that, you know, I know nothing more than that he was 52 and he passed away. I know nothing more. But obviously, it was really sad, you know.
Joe, you've had the opportunity to play with so many amazing voices and to hear so many amazing voices. Where do you rank Chris Cornell? I mean, we've been talking all podcast about how amazing and incredible his voice was and what a talent he was.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, he really had, you know, an exceptional set of pipes and, you know, I would say like an hour end of the business, you know. He was one of the preeminent singers, you know, when you go down the list, you know. And I would think he would be easily in the top 10 all over, you know.
All time.
I know that, you know, everything from his work in Soundgarden to everything he's done since then. And so, and again, I only met him a couple times. I always got the vibe he was going to be a survivor, you know. So that's why it was so shocking. I mean, you know, I hung out with Scott Weiland and Bon Scott and... you know, some other lead singers, and you look at Scott Weiland, and you look in their eyes, and there's this kind of distant look, and you go, man, I hope he makes it. And I never got that vibe from Chris. You know, I thought he was going to be there, but you can never tell. I don't know.
What is it about rock and roll? You're certainly somebody who's been through everything. And what, you know, what it, is, you know, and again, the reports are early, and these are just reports, but they have been confirmed by the police that they're investigating this as a suicide. What is it about? Is there something about the lifestyle that leads?
Well, you know what? If you look at history, artists have always been on the fringe end of you know, having the foot, both feet on the ground.
Yeah.
It goes back to the, you know, every generation has artists that are tormented. And so looking back, it just fits in with a pattern. Poets, you know, writers, painters, all through history have had demons to deal with. I think it goes hand in hand with having some kind of gift, especially when you're a performing artist. It takes something out of you to go out and do that no matter what. And so I think it just goes hand in hand. But again, it doesn't mean that you have to go down that road to be able to use your talent and entertain people or express yourself. It just seems to be come with the territory.
And when you think about grunge, I mean, Chris Cornell is obviously a grunge icon. Did that genre catch you off guard? And when you look back at it now, it's amazing. You know, you can't explain it to people who weren't listening to music at that time, but the first time you heard Nirvana or the first time you heard Soundgarden, did you say to yourself, this is different?
No.
Yeah.
No, I thought they were very pop oriented, frankly.
Yeah.
They wrote songs, really, you know, well-constructed songs. I mean, I didn't. It was a new generation coming up. So, you know, it was like this whole, you know, supposed new thing, but no, I didn't hear any difference. The songs structured like good pop songs, just like a lot of the greatest blues songs that were recorded in the 30s and 40s were. If you put electric guitars on them, which we started doing, they were great pop songs.
Yeah.
And for their time, and so no, I didn't get that. It just seemed like there was a scene there with a lot of great rock bands, and it just kind of exploded out of Seattle. And I think it was the industry turned it into tried to make it into this brand new thing. But you know, when I've talked to the guys in STP and who we got to know really well, and I've since played with the DeLeo brothers and Robert, and you know, we wrote in the studio with them, they said, you know, this whole business about it's all alternative and we can't be on the same stage with you guys. It's like, they're all big fans of the rock and roll,
yeah,
from every generation. So amongst the musicians, I don't get there was a great separation. I think that was more of a media thing, you know?
Joe, and having dealt successfully with substance abuse and that kind of thing, when you look at that Seattle scene and you look at losing Andrew Wood or losing Lane Staley or losing Kurt Cobain or losing now Chris Cornell, from your perspective, is there something about that particular movement where, you know, like as you're talking about, did those guys just want to play in a rock band and, you know, or the fame got to them, or is it the drug use? I mean, Chris Cornell had been sober since 2003 by all reports. Is there anything that you think from, you know, having been doing this for so long that is specific to that Seattle grunge scene that has led to the loss of a lot of these guys way before their time?
No, but I think that there was a lot of heroin use in that area.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, I've met people that didn't have anything to do with music that it was a lot because of, it was a port of entry from the East, where a lot of the stuff used to come from, or probably still does. I mean, I know that there was a lot that came through that port, you know, and so it might have been a little easier to get. But, you know, I don't think that the substance, the particular substance, is what matters. I think what, you know, because if it wasn't, it would be wine, or it would be whatever, mm-hmm. you know. And again, it goes deeper than you know, whatever the substance is. It's more about the tendency to abuse it.
I think that,
again, like I said, you know, it's endemic all through history. I mean, look at Hemingway, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He drank himself till he couldn't drink anymore, and then he, you know. He
killed himself.
That, I think that led to his demise, you know.
Yeah.
And he's probably one of the, if not the best writer from this century, from the last century, you know.
I agree. I think it's timing at that time and geography. So you had a lot of heroin that time in that area of the country, kind of like San Francisco in the 60s.
Yeah.
Where you happen to have Osley there making all this acid.
Yeah.
And then all the bands were taking it there, you know. But, Joe, as someone who's recovering, you know, is it hard? Is it still a struggle every day for you? I mean, for Chris Cornell, it was over a decade. So is there any time, after a while, that it's like, okay, things are starting to settle down and I can do this? Or is it just a constant struggle?
I don't think about it every day, but by any means. I don't even look at it like I'm recovering. I'm like, you know, I'm brushed up against it, and, you know, and I'm smarter for it, and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not, anyway, some of that stuff is, obviously one of the things that helped save you in the beginning, but, you know, I kind of tend to think that, I just have to carry a little more baggage around.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
But I don't think about it every day.
Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot for joining us from Israel and for sharing some thoughts on Chris Cornell. And how's everything going in Israel? Big fans in Israel? I mean, how many people show up?
Yeah. Well, we played it to close to 50,000 people last night. And people around very excited that we were here.
Yeah.
Playing and, you know, wandering around the streets. We're having a good time. We're going in to meet Prime Minister in a minute.
Nice.
He's in the van right now going in. And then and they're looking forward to the possibility of Trump coming next week. So
they are.
That will be historic.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's great. It's an amazing, amazing place to be.
Well, Joe Perry, thanks for giving us a little extra sauce on Chris Cornell.
All right. Well, it's a sad day. But, anyway, thanks for having me on.
Hi
to all the fans out there, man.
Yeah, there's that. I mean, rock and roll has lost a lot of very talented people, and it's sad.
It's the end of an era, you know. I think that Chris's thing wasn't that. That I don't know how to address that, but I know that we're getting to the point where a lot of the pioneers from the 60s and 70s are getting to that age too.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I wouldn't count
Chris in that at this point. I mean, that's just sad. He had a lot of good years ahead of him, and I feel really bad for the family. And thanks for having me on.
Okay. That song, Chris Cornell's tribute to his friend and roommate Andrew Wood of the band Mother Love Bone, who we discussed died of a heroin overdose, and that's why Chris and Eddie went and formed Temple of the Dog as a tribute. And that's, I mean, listen to the lyrics of that song. It's so weird to think, but that was his goodbye to his friend who left without saying goodbye to him.
Yep.
And Chris Cornell has now done that and has now left. You know, it's just, that's why I think it's so screwed up. I mean, I understand. Yeah. He's now done that. I mean, he wrote a song about being tortured by that, and now he's done that. You know. So, we've been talking about Chris Cornell and his way too early death, and we're joined now by an accomplished author who not only writes legitimate books, but for years covered the career of Chris Cornell, writing for the Boston Herald or for The Voice or Noisy or Dig Boston. Dave Wedge joins us here on Extra Sauce for some further extra sauce on Chris Cornell. Dave.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Well, I mean, this is shocking. Joe Perry just said that it was an absolute shock to him and that Chris Cornell died way too young.
Yeah, I absolutely. I mean, look, I graduated college in 93, so I started my music writing career covering bands like Soundgarden and Nirvana and Pearl Jam and all those early 90s grunge bands, and you know, it was definitely a moment in time when those bands came out. You know, we had just gone into Desert Storm. You know,
yeah.
My generation, kind of a lot of my friends were going over to the Middle East, and it was the first time that a generation of young people had experienced war since Vietnam.
That's
really.
A great point.
And kind of the music that was coming out in those, you know, 91 to 94 really kind of captured that angry, angsty spirit that my generation had, people in their early 20s at that time. And certainly Chris Cornell with his dark themes, you know, was a big part of that. And, you know, I remember distinctly when Louder Than Love first came out in 91, you know, me and all my friends, you know, we were always going to Boston hardcore shows, you know, seeing all, you know, Tree, Slapshot, Sam Black Church, all those bands. And when Louder Than Love came out and Big Dumb Sex, we were like, wow, this is it. Like, this is the sound we've been looking for. It was that mix of metal, rock, and hardcore.
Right.
And,
yeah.
But yet it was accessible, you know, and it was a cool sound, and they were a great band. And what's most sad to me is that, you know, all those guys from that generation are dying really young. And, you know, the older rockers from the generation before, gladly, a lot of them are living long into their 70s and 80s and continuing to do stuff. But this generation is really destroying itself, and it's sad to see.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's a lot. There's, you know, opiates, man. You know, I mean, it's a drug. It's a generation that, I mean, look at what you guys were just talking about with Andrew Wood. You know, the whole thing started where they were upset because their friend died of a heroin overdose, and then Kurt Cobain kills himself.
Yeah.
And then Lane Staley and Mike Starr, and it goes on and on and on. You know, and I just think it's a generation that was raised. They're very anti-establishment. You know, even more so than the Vietnam era musicians. I think that they were very independent. They were very confused. I think there's a lot of depression, and the drug use is really, really bad. And I think with a guy like Chris Cornell, who's, you know, clearly struggled with those issues his entire life, now he's, you know, beyond middle age. He's 52 years old, you know, or in middle age, and, you know, he's got kids and a wife, and he's playing every night. And, you know, who knows where that depression takes you? It obviously takes you to a very dark place, you know?
Yeah, and I don't think you can understand it if you don't suffer from it. We spent a lot of time with a lot of assholes texting the show about, you know, suicide is is a coward's way out, or it's a you know, it's a selfish way out. And I don't think you can until you fight it, I don't think you can understand it.
I certainly, I'm not going to sit here and say I understand why anyone kills themselves, because no one does. You know, no one knows why someone does that. My best friend committed suicide 7 years ago, a firefighter, you know, in Brockton. And, you know, we knew he was upset and he was going through some hard times, but we didn't expect it, certainly not that day. You know, I talked to him the day before and he was fine. And so suicide's something that people don't understand. You know, and the reports I've seen about Chris Cornell are the same. It was business as usual. He put on a great show. He's talking to people after the show. You know, there was no signs that he was in trauma. But a lot of times when people commit suicide, they plan it, or they know they're going to do it. And a lot of what I've read about it, and believe me, since my friend, I've consumed everything I can read about it, is that they almost come to a peace, and that's why they seem so peaceful before they do it, because it's a release. They know that it's over. They know they're going to do it. And they just kind of like, they're prepared for it. And I don't know if that's true or not, but I've read a lot of stuff about that.
Yeah. I have a friend who killed himself. He researched the kind of gun he wanted to use and the kind of ammunition. He found a place in the woods where he could do it. He made arrangements to move a particular chair he would sit in every day to move it out there to the woods. It was a lot of planning that went into it.
Yeah.
And but that's the thing. We see him from the outside. You have no idea. The guy's got a family. He's super successful, incredibly talented. But I, you know, the one common thing I hear people describe depression as is like this huge, heavy, wet blanket that just is all, it's completely on top of you. And it just makes it hard to just move, to physically move, to live, to think. And if he's been fighting that since, you know, we talked on the show about that time with his parents
getting divorced
and he stayed in his house for how long?
2 years.
He
couldn't go when he was young. He couldn't go. It's a teenager. His parents got divorced, and he said in an interview with The Guardian that he couldn't leave his home
Yeah,
for 2 years.
And that's what Black Hole Sun is supposedly about.
Yes.
is that era in his life. And you know, so you're talking about a guy that's where he started. You know, that's where his life started as a, you know, in his formative years. He goes on to join with these, you know, this crazy movement that happened in the early 90s with all these bands that were singing about really dark themes and really heavy music, combining metal and rock and kind of acid rock, you know, mixing all those elements. It's I mean, if you listen back to Alice in Chains, like, that's some really dark shit. You know,
it
what
is.
I mean?
You're right. It is. It's the Dirt album. Dark,
you know, it's cool songs, and like, we listen to it now, we're like, oh yeah, that song's badass because we grew up with it. But the younger generation hears that stuff, and they're like, wow, that's some dark stuff. Like, they don't make dark music like that anymore. And it was a moment in time. But the other myth here, guys, that everyone talks about in these situations, whether it's Prince or, you know, Lane Staley or whoever it is, everyone talks about the money. You know, the guy's worth $60 million. Why would he do that? Well, money doesn't matter when your mind is eating itself.
Yeah.
And that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about a guy who clearly had struggled with depression his whole life, struggled with drug addiction, and everyone's telling him every day how great he is, and he's handsome, and he's making millions, and why can't you be happy? Well, that doesn't help. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking about it now. You talk about what he went through as a teenager, and then, you know, what he goes through with Andrew Wood, his roommate, mm-hmm. what he goes through with Kurt Cobain or whoever.
Or the time where he got famous very quickly.
Yes. And he dealt with that for
possibly, what, like 40 years since that time where he wouldn't leave his house.
Well,
and so after a while, I can imagine you're in your mind, you're like, okay, I'm exhausted.
Yeah. Well, and also, you know, I think what Joe Perry referred to is that in many cases, the most talented of artists, I don't care if it's Vincent Van Gogh or Ernest Hemingway, as he mentioned, or Chris Cornell, a reason why they are able to tap that creativity is oftentimes because of a miserable upbringing or a miserable. It's why comedians say over and over again, they're funny because they had a shitty life. So I think that's a part of it too, Dave.
Yeah, no, I agree. And one more thought, and this may be a little crazy, but I interviewed Lemmy a few years back, and I was very lucky to talk to him, and I had a great interview with him. I had interviewed him a couple of times, but the last interview I had with him, he said something interesting to me, where he said that, you know, all these guys being rock stars, you know, getting married and having kids and having families, he's like, that's bullshit. He's like, it's crazy. He's like, there's no way it can work, and that's why I never did it. And if you guys saw the documentary on Lemmy, he just kind of, he embraced his alcoholism. He embraced his drug use. He embraced his hard living. And he said, you know what, I don't have any anchors, so I don't have to worry about that. So my point of that story is that you look at a guy like Chris Cornell or Eddie Vedder or the rest of them, they do have families. That's got to be a tremendous strain on them doing that kind of work where you're on the road all the time. You know, we all, you know, Greg, I know you're married. You know, your wife is, where are you? When are you coming home? Yeah. I mean, your kids want you. Like, that can't be a healthy thing for you personally to be on the road all the time away from your family. So you got to wonder if, you know, if that's something that plays into these situations,
right. and they feel
guilty that they're not around for their family, and that fuels the depression.
Yeah, and the energy it takes to find a balance.
Yeah, well, it's
between
not,
crazy
know.
Rock and roll business lifestyle.
Yeah.
And then the normalcy of like having
some
kids and getting
can
into
no
school.
No problem. You know, some guys do it no problem. You know, the guys in Aerosmith, many of them have had very happy families for many years.
Yeah.
But you know, maybe sometimes that takes a toll too. But I think musically, guys, you know, Soundgarden's place and their legacy is secure. I mean, they're one of the best bands of the last 30 years. And, you know, I think Soundgarden in particular was more in line with the classic rock bands than even the grunge era bands where, you know, they weren't quite as nihilistic as, say, a Nirvana and they weren't quite as dark as an Alice in Chains. Their music crossed over a little more to the mainstream, I think, than all the rest of those bands. And certainly Chris Cornell has done a lot of mainstream stuff in recent years, and he had that classic rock voice that appealed to so many people. So it's a huge loss.
Where do you rank his voice, Dave? I mean,
he's one of the greatest rock singers of all time, for my money. I mean, you know, you got to. I don't have a list in my mind.
Well, no,
here,
but
Greg,
I mean, but, you know,
I think he's certainly better than all those other ones that we just mentioned. He's the best of that era, certainly, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, all those other guys had unique voices, but no one had the range and the power of Chris Cornell. You know, if you listen to a song like Big Dumb Sex or Black Hole Sun.
Or Ave Maria. Like, yeah, listen to him, of listen Ave to him Maria. To do Ave Maria, yeah. You know?
Yeah, the guy range. Had a very classic voice, and he could have sang any genre where, you know, a guy like Kurt Cobain could only sing punk rock, you know?
Yeah.
But Chris Cornell could go on American Idol and sing and blow people away. He was just a massive talent. It's tough to see all these guys in our generation dying so young. It really blows.
It really does. Well, I thank you for giving us a little extra sauce on Chris Cornell and just a tragic thing. So thank you.
Yeah.
Dave.
Well, play some music for him, guys.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, Dave. Thank you.
Take care.
To think about after both of those guys. I mean, I was, you know, interesting that Joe Perry said he looked in Scott Weiland's eyes and he thought Scott Weiland might not make it, but he looked in Chris Cornell's eyes and he thought Chris Cornell would be a guy who would make it.
And there's a guy who would know because he's been around it his whole life.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
seen the highest of highs and the lowest of lows.
And then, you know, Dave Wedge makes some great points, and I do think that, you know, from the musicology point of view, and hopefully Joe the musicologist is not, you don't have Joe standing by to come
you
on
want
the podcast.
Me to call him?
No, I don't.
No.
he's right about Soundgarden, and even Joe was right about grunge, where, you know, it wasn't necessarily a different genre of music, those were pop songs. So
it's the universal thing about all music, no matter what it is. If it's a good song.
Yeah.
If it's a good song, whether Soundgarden does it or, you know, we're talking about Chris Cornell and his cover of Redemption Song.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's a good song. And I think that's what Joe was trying to say. Like, these guys weren't doing anything new. They were just writing good songs. I mean, there were hundreds and hundreds of grunge bands.
Yeah.
You know, but only a few made it out because they could write good songs.
And Sub Pop was running around ready to sign anybody who had single, like, you know, who had a guitar and a drum set and was had a modicum of talent. They were because they were trying to they wanted to take advantage of it and sign everybody.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. Well, thanks very much for joining us this week on Extra Sauce. Next week, I promise, this has been a tough topic, but I think it's an important one to talk about.
Absolutely.
So and Chris Cornell is going to leave, as Dave said, and as Joe Perry said, going to leave a massive legacy behind. We may just have lost we certainly lost one of the best. We may just have lost the best voice of the last 30 years. So we will be back next week with another episode of Extra Sauce. Thanks for listening. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play. And we'll catch you next week with more Extra Sauce.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.